Khalashing for Khalas? Want to bribe or fine dine? This is SN Fresen. It's all about the food.
Good morning and welcome to the SN Fresen Show. I'm Sharon Lurie, the kosher butcher's wife, or Bubba Shah, some people like to call me. And with Pesach behind us now, of course, I'm starting to think about new kitchen adventures. And what an incredible Pesach adventure the last couple of days have been. I had all my children and grandchildren from all over the world singing and reenacting our exodus from Egypt and, of course, passing it down to the next generation. And that's what it's all about, L'chol Dor V'Dor. So in my fridge, I have a couple of leftovers. And one that I always seem to have leftover must be my fish balls or fish pieces. So I'm going to make a lovely curry with that. And I'll be sharing a recipe with you for a creamy curried cashew nut chicken. Talking about curry, this week's herb is one of my favorites, the curry leaf. So after the break, I'll be chatting about this cute little leaf that oozes such a wonderful flavor and enhances any curry dish. Okay, this curry leaf goes so well with so many other herbs and spices such as coriander and really makes a delicious curry. So stay tuned for the curry recipes coming up.
Khalashing for Khalas? Want to bribe or fine dine? This is SN Fresen. It's all about the food.
You're listening to the SN Fresen Show, and as said before, this week's herb is the curry leaf. The curry leaf is actually an indispensable herb used in Indian cooking. And this leaf is soft and not as hard as the bay leaf. You know, when you cook with a bay leaf, you take it out afterwards because you're not going to sit and eat a bay leaf. Whereas a curry leaf just gets soft and melts into the dishes. And of course, it has wonderful medicinal properties. And if you, one thing you've got to remember, if you're going to grow this little bush at home, don't eat the berries. The seeds are toxic. However, the leaf has the most incredible nutrients and vitamins like A, B, C. And the curry leaves apparently help improve vision. They also reduce stress. They boost immunity. And they are such a good source of minerals such as calcium, phosphorus, iron, magnesium, which is essential for our health and blood circulation and more. So people actually drink curry, the water from curry leaves. So you doing this, you would prepare the curry leaves with 2 to 3 cups of water and a handful of curry leaves. You just simmer it for 10 to 15 minutes. You strain it and you drink it warm. Ever, without sounding like a typical American medical drug advert with a long list of side effects, I do need to say that I think if you have kidney problems or blood pressure problems, speak to your doctors first before you drink the water of curry leaves. However, for the show, we are chatting about recipes that include the use of curry leaves to enhance its beautiful flavor, and curry leaves fried with spices and fresh herbs such as garlic, coriander seeds, etc., make a delicious, delicious curry. If you can't get fresh curry leaves, which I think you can, which you should be able to, you can use dried dried curry leaves. You can get them in the bottle. I think dried curry leaves, sort of crushed up. Use double the amount that you would normally use with fresh leaves. So fat and heat are two essential components that will help you to get the most out of your curry leaves. So the heat helps draw out the fragrant essential oils from the leaves, and the fat, like coconut oil, olive oil, etc., captures it. And essential oils are soluble in fats. So it will make a beautiful, mellowed fragrance. I mean, when you fry curry leaves, that your whole kitchen is enhanced with this beautiful flavor. Some of the flavors stay in the leaves. Some move into the oil. But once you add all the spices and herbs to the oil, as you'll see later on when I give you the recipe, you will taste the benefits of all those beautifully fried herbs in the oil. So let me give you the recipe for a simple yet sumptuous curried coconut cashew nut chicken. So you'll need 1 kilogram of cubed deboned chicken breast or thighs. You will need a little bit of coconut oil to fry that in. I like to use coconut oil in my curries, but you can use regular oil if you want your vegetable oil. You'll also need 2 tablespoons of flour and some salt and pepper. Then, step 2 is 20 grams of curry leaves, available at most of the shops, including Fresh Fellas, where they're already pre-checked for you. You'll need 100 grams of cashew nuts, the raw ones, not the salted ones, 1 cup of chopped onions, 2 hot chilies, 1/2 teaspoon of cinnamon spice, 1 tablespoon of garam masala, 1 teaspoon of turmeric, 1 tablespoon of finely grated ginger, 1 teaspoon of fresh garlic crushed, 20 grams of fresh coriander, and 1 cup of coconut cream. So what we do is we salt and pepper and sprinkle the flour over the chicken breasts and we fry them. We remove them once they're lovely and brown on the outside. Remember, you're going to cook them again afterwards in the curry sauce. So it doesn't have to be cooked all the way through, but by the time you fry them so that they're brown on each side, they'll probably be cooked through. But fry them in batches. Don't fry 1 kilo of cubed chicken all at once, otherwise it becomes really watery and you want a nice brown caramelized chicken. So then what you do is you fry the chicken a little bit of coconut oil, and when it's brown you set it aside, and in the same frying pan, remove the chicken, in the same frying pan you fry, you can add a little bit more coconut oil, and you fry the curry leaves and the cashew nuts. And then you add the onions and you just fry that until the coconut, the cashew nuts go brown and the onions start to turn a caramel brown color. Then you add 2 hot chilies sliced in half, 1/2 teaspoon of cinnamon spice, 1 tablespoon of garam masala, your teaspoon of turmeric, your fresh ginger, fresh garlic, coriander, and fry that all up for about 5 minutes, and then you add 1 cup of coconut cream. Then you take that, put it into a jug, and you blend it. Put it into the food processor and blend it, or you can use your hand blender. And you just blend that all together. Then you put the chicken back into the frying pan. Add the sauce that you've just processed and heat it all the way through, allowing it to cook for about another 10 minutes. And by that stage, everything should be cooked and prepared and ready to be served on basmati rice or whichever rice you like to use, put a couple of curry leaves and maybe a teaspoon of turmeric into the water, and you'll have a lovely flavor-enhanced rice. So as I said, my family are out here from London, and I thought no better person to speak to than my daughter-in-law, Hannah, who is a caterer, who is a wedding planner, par excellence, as only a mother-in-law could say. And we'll be chatting to her and hearing all about London and the food there and how they prepare weddings and what goes into it. That's coming up after the break.
Khalashing for Khalas. Want to braai or fine dine? This is Essen Fressen. It's all about the food.
So we're sitting around the breakfast table, having a light chat. It's a totally different breakfast table to what we've been used to in the last 8 days with all the plastic and the tin foil. This time it's just all about the toast and the omelettes. And I thought to myself, you know, here I've got an interview on tap. Yes, my daughter-in-law is a food stylist. What else are you, Han? You're a wedding planner, a caterer, believe me, she can cook. Is my son lucky? Anyway, and I thought, right, let me chat to my daughter-in-law, Hannah Lurie. So, Hannah, tell us about your business, what you do, etc.
So, I have been in the catering and events world for maybe 10 years now. After a degree in criminology, it was the natural progression to start with events, of course, once I came out of university.
Criminology, okay. I'm sure there are lots of crimes in the
kitchen. I was going to say, it helps for sure. It definitely helps. But after having a baby, I realised that it would be much better to work for myself. So I have been in the last 4 years doing my own events and weddings, a few catering jobs here and there. And yeah, I do anything from the full wedding package, so the very, very start to the very end of someone's wedding journey, or the on the day itself, or anywhere sort of in between.
And you've been on many a journey.
Yes.
You've been to, I mean, you did a function in Italy, which exactly. I'll never forget.
Yes.
All those cheeses.
I know. It was amazing. It was hard not to eat what they were serving.
Oh, tell us about all those beautiful kosher cheeses.
It was sensational, and the views, the rolling hills. There was a long table with all the guests sitting on. There were cocktails as the sun was coming down, and the food was just amazing. You know, the table was filled. There were flowers, of course, but the sharing food, just as far as the eye could see, was just amazing. It was unforgettable.
Yeah, and what other things were there? You know, pasta-wise and...
So there was melanzane, So basically the couple really loved pasta, so they had sort of like a take on the pestos. So there was a pea and mint pesto in one of the pastas. There was a... they even went down the fish route and had like a creamy salmon pasta. It was delicious. Yeah, and the breads to start and the olive oils and the cheeses and the burrata. Just endless.
Wonderful.
It was amazing. And then the desserts, of course. How can you not forget the desserts? The tiramisu and the affogato was just, a dairy lover's delight.
Absolutely. And Italy is my word. It's just the place to have all these magnificent kosher pastas and cheeses and things like that. With catering in London, do you find that the client will choose a venue? Are you allowed to bring your own kosher caterers to that particular venue and then they cash out the whole place?
So it depends. There are some venues in London that have set two or three kosher caterers that can work there. If you want to then bring another kosher caterer, then either the answer will be no, or they will then have to do a trial, or there'll be a supplement fee that they'll have to charge. The venue will charge the caterer, which is usually then passed on to the client. But more often than not, you can bring a kosher caterer to a venue that doesn't have any kosher caterers, because it's something that they can't provide. So it's very easy to do that. And they have a mashgiach there on the day, and they make sure that everything is as it should be and kosher.
Okay. So now you're going to do another wedding in
Spain, in Sotogrande. Yes. Grande. So that's just outside of Marbella. Right. And I'm currently in the planning stages of that. And I will be going out at some point in the next few months to do sort of like a day of site visit. So we'll go to the venue, we'll have the food tasting, we'll see any florists or hair and makeup, things like that, that we can just sort of whack out in one day. The wedding will be in September. And it's so lovely to have European weddings because we can have them outside.
London,
it's just not the case. Yes.
Is there a particular wedding season in London?
It's usually the summer. Sometimes December weddings are quite nice, and you can sort of play up to the fact that it's a wintry wedding and have warming cocktails and things like that.
Yes.
Wedding season is usually in the summer, but regardless, you always have to plan for an inside wedding.
Yeah.
And then the plan B is the outside if you have the space or the weather works for you. So we unfortunately don't have the luxury of being in South Africa and having outside weddings.
And just going back to the wedding that's in my bag, it must be so difficult to source the kosher food there. you know, do you get a rabbi or mashgiach or somebody there to source it all for you?
So there are, Marbella is actually quite a popular wedding destination for people in London. So there's a lot of suppliers out there, whether it is the kosher caterers, whether it is the florists or anything. There's sort of like a pool of people that use those kosher suppliers that are recommended as well. And it's much easier than sort of going eeny, meeny, miny, mo. Which right. caterer should I use, or which it's, they come from recommendations, and they're based out there. Otherwise, it would cost so much money to ship everything from London.
Right.
So everyone from the food to the rabbi on the day to the mashgiach, they're all based out in Spain, and they've often worked with couples from the UK, so they're well
fantastic.
Aware.
Fantastic. And do you find, do you have a lot more fleishig meals or milchig meals?
I'd say definitely meaty meals for sure. I mean, my dream would be to have dairy, but I think more often than not.
No, you've got to have meaty.
Well, there you go. It's more often than not people are having the meat, and they want the meat, and then the desserts are, you know, their pariv or, you know.
And you get such wonderful pariv things there. I mean, your pariv creams are incredible.
Yeah, delicious. And also the fruit as well. In London, we're not really blessed with fruit, but, you know, when you venture out into Europe and obviously, you know, when you come to South Africa, the fruit is so much more delicious.
The fruit is more delicious here in South Africa?
Oh, for sure. For sure. The stuff that you've got now, you have watermelon that's going out of season that's much better than ours that's in season. So, yeah, it's
But you have better grain than us.
Not if you're making it.
I remember last year the huge pieces of crème. Oh, it was too terrific. So you do, I mean, you do big functions like weddings and that. Smaller functions. What kind of smaller functions would you do? Like a barmy or a...
Yeah, so I mean, I'm like doing sort of everything in between. So from a very small dinner party, I did a ufruf for 15 people, was after shul, very, very small. So really anything sort of from the far and the sort of from the very large to the very small, I'm very happy and comfortable to do those. And also sometimes I dabble in a bit of catering as well. So I'll do the cooking myself, and I'm dragging my husband to help. And we have good fun. It's nice. We did an ufruf where we did some amazing slow cooked pulled brisket and some Asian chicken, and we did really lovely, vibrant and beautiful salads and sides with it as well.
Oh, have you got a nice recipe for a salad? One that you'd like do every time and it just gets polished off?
Yeah, so the favourite for sure is our tender stem with honey tahini and black sesame seeds over the top. It is delicious. You just boil the tender stem for a minute and a half, drop it into ice cold water to save the colour, then pat dry and flash fry until it's got a bit of char on it, and then drizzle over the honey tahini on the top, and then the sesame seeds too. It's so easy and it's so delicious.
So do you mix the tahini and the honey together?
Yes, so you start with the tahini as opposed to the paste.
Yes.
Then you add some lemon juice, some honey, and slowly but surely add the water to sort of get it to the consistency that you like.
Yes.
Add some salt to taste, and then just drizzle it over the top, and it's delicious. It's
and then
so
you
yum.
Sprinkle the black sesame.
Exactly.
Sounds
absolutely
it's so
delicious. Tasty. It really is.
I know that you love to do bachelorettes and or hen's parties, as some people call them.
Yes.
Okay. That's your favourite. So tell us what you do for that.
So I really like to make the weekend all about the bride.
Okay, so you go away.
Yes. Well, if we can, yeah. it's always away from home. If it's not usually these days out of the UK, I think just because of things have gone up in price so much. But we always like to go away for 2 nights. And if not, we'll do the Friday night is usually a Shabbat at the bride's mother's home, and we have, you know, the usual favorites, so chicken soup and, you know, whatever the bride likes. And then the second day or night we go away, so somewhere out in the country. One of the brides, we went out to London and we stayed in a house the other side of London from where she lives, And then, yeah, we tailor everything. So the very small welcome baskets that they got on the beds, to personalised baskets and bags and things like that. And then usually a dinner party that has everything that the bride loves, and incorporated her favourites, really. But yeah, do you do demos for bridal parties?
I'm thinking of doing them. I think it would be really popular. And I've had a few people phoning and saying, would I do them? And I haven't until now really thought about it, but you've actually excited me. But here, the men tend to go away for the weekend. I think the girls either do a challah party, or it's like one night. So a cooking demonstration for a new bride could be quite exciting.
I think it's a really good idea. I mean, you could do anything from like the starter pack into wedding life, or to being a bride and, you know, the crowd favourites that you know work as women in the Jewish world, things like that. Or, you know, like the challah is always a good idea, to teach them maybe some tips and tricks. But I think it's always great, because it's always good to have an activity. Yes. We've always done some form of activity, whether it's pampering and massages, or, you know, going on one time we went on a treasure hunt around Brighton, basically tailored everything to the bride. So something that is personal to the bride, that is an activity that will get the guests excited. I think cooking demos is really a great idea.
Yeah, you can actually do like possibly a meal during the week,
exactly.
Or your first Friday night, or yeah.
Exactly. And it would lead up as well, you know, you could cook all the favourite things together and then end up having that amazing meal together, whether it's on the Friday night or whether it's on the Saturday. I think it's going to be a really popular thing to do.
Okay, so being a typical Yiddish mama, what do you give my son on Shabbos? What's your favourite dish to make? Both of your favourites.
So we came across this recipe a year or two ago. I really love one-pan dishes, one-pan meals.
Absolutely.
Because they're so great.
Especially in London where you don't have help. One-pan dishes are terrific.
Absolutely. And I came across this recipe online and I sort of compared two or three to sort of create my own.
I do that all the time.
But then it's great. But then also on the flip side, then you end up going back afterwards if you haven't written down the recipe.
Yes.
To try and work out what you did. But in theory, it's a Greek one pan chicken and rice dish. You marinate chicken pieces in the fridge overnight with lemon juice, oil and some lots of different spices and herbs. Then when you're ready to cook it,
the herbs would be like,
so you've got oregano, I think there's parsley in there, maybe some chili if you can handle the spice. I think there's lemon zest as well. Then when you're ready to cook, you sear the chicken on both sides, and if you have any remaining juice, you basically pour that over the chicken when it bakes. But you bake the chicken in a whole load of rice, pour over chicken stock, cover, put it in the oven. I can't remember for how long, but it is so good. I can give you the recipe. It's really popular. And then you take the foil off for the last 15 minutes and you get a nice crisp on it. It's delicious and it's so flavourful.
Skin on the chicken?
Skin on, always.
To get that crisp.
Always.
Right. And I would definitely do it bone in.
Yeah.
Okay. That's terrific. So we'll share that recipe. So any themes that stand out for you, Hannah, that you've worked with?
So there was one that stands out for me. It was actually quite relevant for this interview. There was a couple, a South African couple that I was working with, who had their wedding, and they decided to have a day after lunch. And we worked with the caterer to create a menu that the caterer hadn't done before. And obviously we had to make it South African. So we did on arrival with drinks, we did biltong and draaivors, and of course your amazing recipe from your first book, the pap and wors sticks with the chili sauce. Oh, delicious.
Yes, because there are a few people that make boerewors there now.
Yes.
And they're rabatats sundaes.
Exactly.
Tastes of Africa in London.
Exactly what I was going to say. You know, if we can't come to here all the time and get the ingredients that we want, we can thankfully get them, or some of them, at home now as well. And then moving on to the mains, there was a huge centrepiece. There was a huge barbecue or a braai, and then we braaied meats and had amazing salads, everything from the, you know, the usual, the white cabbage salad with the crunchy noodles on the top, and of course the beetroot that is super popular over here. And then desserts, we had Melva pudding, and they made a dairy-free milk tart. Yeah, it was so special, and for me as well, you know, I loved having that little taste of Africa as well, as the guests did too. It was really good. Really, really yummy.
So, Hannah, is there anything that you'd like to do that you haven't done before for a wedding?
Do you know what I would really like to lean into a bit more, I think, is these winter weddings. I think we have such beautiful, you know, the cold kind of does not usually seem as beautiful, but we have such lovely time of year where it's dark and it's cozy and it's cold, and you know, you can really play up with wearing big furs to a wedding. Like, you can get this gorgeous bridal white furs that you can wear around your shoulders and things like that. So, you know, playing on that for a wedding menu would be amazing. You know, like a mulled wine to start with, like instead of the cold cocktails, going something warm and wintry, and then moving on to the actual menu itself, you know, something that is quite popular in the UK that is not so popular over here just yet is sharing food. So on the centre of each table, you have like a large, you know, carvery style food, whether you're going for a chicken or you're going for a beef joint, you can get a whole beef joint in the centre of each table, a large carving knife, and someone's designated from that table to be the carver, you know, playing around with a chef's hat. Maybe they've been allocated and they have to put on the chef's hat and the apron and carving the meat that way and dishing it out to the guests on that table. You know, yummy roast potatoes and some warming sides, things like that, I think would be good fun to play around with. I think, you know, why not lean into the weather that we have in the UK by really enjoying those winter weddings and, you know, having fires if possible, and yeah, just having a bit of a warming vibe. I think it's just so
warm
nice.
Sensation.
Exactly.
You could have beautiful bread and butter pudding. You could.
Exactly.
I've got a recipe for the pour-pour bread and butter pudding, which is so easy to make. And you could have a beautiful, thick, wintry soup.
Exactly.
With lovely artisanal breads on the table.
Absolutely. Anything to sort of keep you warm in those colder months.
I'm getting so hungry. We're going to have a supper.
I know.
Well, Hannah, thank you for joining me. It's been so lovely having you here.
Thank you for having me.
And what a win to have you on my show. Thank you for joining us. And I hope that you enjoyed our little chat, everybody. And I'll be back after the break.
Khalashing for Khalas? Want to braai or fine dine? This is Essen Fressen. It's all about the food.
You're listening to Adrian Bugatti, and we're once again talking meal planning, budgeting, and last week we spoke about being frugal as opposed to being stingy. Frugal is where you're consciously trying to save money, and being stingy or being penny pinching is a more polite word, is where you are only buying things that are the cheapest regardless of the quality of what you're buying. So remember, when you're frugal, it's just planning really well and buying things that are within your budget, and it allows for you to buy treats every now and again. As I said, I did not change my tomato sauce because I found the cheapest one was actually the most unhealthy one, and the most expensive one was really, really good. I didn't go for the carb-free one because it's not necessary in my house, but if you are on a carb-free diet, then that is what you need to buy. It is an important part. Also, I know a lot of people often say that, you know, they have to go into the butchery to see the cuts of meat and things like that. Now, that is true for a lot of things. But one of the trips, I don't know how you say it, is to use the size of the meat per person or the weight. It's pretty simple to arrange. When you are doing a roast, for a man it's 250 grams and for a lady it's 200 grams. The reason being is you are serving vegetables on the side. When you are buying meat that is on the bone, it is now a little bit more. So if you're buying sort of beef ribs, you're going to look at 300 grams because of the weight of those ribs. So add an extra 50 grams. If you are doing lamb chops bones are very light and they're very small, so you can stick to that. But remember, most people are going to serve 2 to 3 chops per person. So you cut down in total and you have, once again, 200 grams, depending on what you're serving with that. With a chicken, it's a little bit more difficult, but a chicken can be cut into a whole lot of pieces, depending on who you are. And sometimes it's actually going to be cheaper to buy the individual pieces that you need as opposed to buying a whole chicken and cutting it down. Because if you've got people who are not going to eat certain parts of the chicken, you're wasting your chicken. But the truth is, if I break down a chicken, and Sharon will be able to tell you this better, the chicken breast, if you've got nobody in the house who eats it, then the chicken breast is easily used to make chicken mayonnaise for lunches and sandwiches. My family love toasted chicken mayonnaise. Then, or to put it in a salad. And do a, instead of a Caesar salad, do a chicken Caesar salad. You can, if you're prepared to be a little adventurous, you can buy the vegan style feta to add to the salad. Then there's other things that you can do. The chicken, you're doing the thighs, you're doing the drumsticks. And I use my chicken wings. What I do is I save the chicken wings. I also save the carcasses and I make chicken soup with that. So you're using the whole chicken. And that's an important part of being frugal and of meal planning. Chicken soup is easy. You make it, you stick it in the freezer. And what I have started trying to do, I'm not always successful because sometimes I forget, is to do the chicken soup instead of using it for Friday night. We have other soups for Friday nights or for during the week. I will put it into bags, into freezer bags at 250 mils each. And they are perfect when you are not feeling well. Just take it out the freezer, pop it either in a pot to defrost overheat or into the microwave in a dish. And you have chicken soup that is homemade and delicious. And one of the reasons that chicken soup works so well for healing and making you feel better is because it's usually made with fresh produce. So instead of synthetic. I know when I'm planning my meals, I'm going to need at least 3 meals of mincemeat a month, minimum. 2 bolo roast briskets or humps and 4 brow packs, as well as chicken breasts for 2 meals. That's an average meal month for me. It's already planned in advance. I know what I'm buying. If we're going to have a braai, it will be for a special occasion that I will then have like lamb chops or ribs. Boerewors is another thing that we often have. And when I'm talking mince, I'm talking about boerewors. I'm talking about burger patties, chicken mince as well. Please just be aware that chicken mince is quite dry, so you need a really, really good fat additive. And for me, that would be chicken skin margarine that is really high in fat, or some olive oil even, to give it that little spicy, peppery flavor. Now, at one stage, I did lose control of what was in my freezer, what was in my fridge. I just stopped caring for a bit. That happens. Life happens. It gets in the way. And that's why meal planning is so important. It's why you need to do it regularly. And even if it's only once a month or once every 2 months, put it on a calendar somewhere that you notice it. It's in your diary and everybody can help. You don't need to do it on your own. You can do it as a family event if you really want to. I'm not so sure how much family you will be able to get involved unless the kids enjoy the cooking. And that's where you are. So as I said, 10 years ago, I went through my pantry for the first time. I found cans that had expired 5-6 years beforehand. I had about 6 packets of lasagna sheets. I had all sorts of stuff that really... I think I even had a can of Vata Bromakis. I don't think I've ever seen them again. But I had them because I had a recipe in mind and then never landed up making the recipe. And also sudden kosher ingredients that you might use once in a recipe. Those can kind of make their way or creep their way into your pantry. Keep control of your pantry and you will keep control of your budget. This is Adrian Bugatti and we're talking meal planning and grocery budgeting.
Khalashing for khalas? Want to braai or fine dine? This is SN Fresen. It's all about the food.
Well, it's been fun being with you, and I hope you've enjoyed the show as much as I did, and enjoy your curried chicken. And you can use that recipe as well if you want to pour on curry fish balls. And have a great week. Thank you to everybody who helped me with this show. Thank you to Craig, and see you soon.